Right, let's get started. First of all, I'll introduce myself. I'm Tobruk One. I write for TheMintani.com, which is EU's premier news site, and I also run the EVE Onion, which is EU's premier satirical website. So today I'm going to be talking to you about the history of NullSec, as you probably already know. I'm going to go from 2011 right up to the 2nd of June 2014. I'll start off by describing the events that have happened in that time. Then you can ask me questions about it and politics in general, stuff like that. So I'll start off by describing the political landscape at the start of 2011. In the north of NullSec, you had the Northern Coalition. Note that's different to Northern Coalition DOTS, which are currently helping you in catch. They were set up several months prior to 2011, but at this time they didn't have any solve, and they were mostly irrelevant. In the east, you had the Drone Russian Federation. They were quite newly born, and I'll get onto that later. And they were formed of Solar Fleet, Legion of Death, Red Alliance, and White Noise. And then in Declean, you had the Declean Coalition, as you might expect. And that was formed of Goonswarm, Wildly Inappropriate, Test, and a few others. And then in the northwest, you had IT Alliance. And these were basically the resurrected remains of Band of Brothers, who were disbanded in 2009. So now I'll move on to the events that happened. First, the Fountain, which is slightly south of Declean, fell to the Declean Coalition. It was owned by IT at the time, but this invasion completely, well, it sort of signalled the beginning of the end for IT. Between them, the Northern Coalition and the Declean Coalition dealt a series of blows to IT, and eventually they destroyed a super capital fleet as well as several sub-capital fleets and normal capital fleets. And a few weeks later, 6VDT, where a large battle took place last summer, was hell camped for a week, and this shattered IT's morale. So, what went wrong with IT? Well, when it was formed in 2009, it was the third iteration of Bob. Before that, you had the original Band of Brothers, and then the Kenzuku Alliance, which they regrouped to after they were disbanded, and then IT. But this wasn't just Bob, because IT was formed from ex-Bob corporations, as well as corporations from the greater Bob community. Now, as you may have heard, Band of Brothers believed themselves to be the elite forces of the game of their time. And the greater Bob community didn't really have members that were as good as Bob in PvP. But that they all grouped together in one alliance, which caused a bit of cultural difference between them. And so they didn't really get along. There was a schism between the elite PvP Band of Brothers corps and the greater Bob community corps. And this was one of their fatal things which led to their collapse when the Fountain was invaded. So most of Fountain had fallen by mid-February of 2011, and by April, Quirius and Period Basis, which are further south, had also fallen to just random alliances. And finally, Delphall fell by May. And then the next big change that happened to NullSec was the fall of the Northern Coalition. Now, the Northern Coalition went back years, I think to 2006, maybe before that. It was formed to counter Band of Brothers, who were quite big, as I just said earlier, particularly in the earlier years. But by October 2010, they found they had no real threats. And they'd never gone on the offensive before. They were a purely defensive alliance and coalition. So they decided, somewhat foolishly, to just declare war on the Solar Fleet for no reason. Now, at first, it wasn't really a serious invasion. Solar Fleet lived to the east of NC, but NC went after their capital ship assembly arrays, where supercaps are built, and jump bridges. It wasn't actually intended to conquer any Sov in the beginning. However, the Northern Coalition's military leader then changed, and he went for a different tactic. Solar were bordered by Legion of Death. And instead of going for Solar, the new military commander decided to go for Legion of Death. One of the regions they occupied at the time was Kalavila, the Kalavila expanse. So they went after that and they took Sov there. Now, by well, within a few weeks, half of Kalavila had fallen, and this alarmed all the other Russians that lived in the east. Prior to this, all the Russians didn't really get along. They lived in similar areas of space, that's why they're called the Drone Russians. However, they hadn't united before, or at least not for a very long time. But this invasion by the Northern Coalition was significant enough to unite them into one force, which was known as the Drone Russian Federation. And they began to take the region back in January, and then by February, they launched an attack on the NC's homeland. There are many super capital battles that took place in this time. War tie-dye was introduced by about a year, I think. So this gave battles a very random result. I mean, it wasn't really dependent on, it was more dependent on who was there first and who loaded grid first than tactics and numbers. So both sides lost quite large numbers of super capitals. But what differentiated between the two was that the Drone Russian Federation was able to cope with their losses much better. And this was both because they were quite rich and because of NC's poor, what should you call it, building tactics and selling tactics. Basically, although NC had hundreds, literally hundreds of capital ship assembly arrays, they actually sold to their enemies, which is never really a good idea. It's estimated that around half of the Pandemic Legion Titans in the game, at the time, Pandemic Legion weren't really tied to anyone, so they were mercs, by the way. Half of their Titans were built by Northern Coalition. So some of NC were being killed by their own Titans. In addition to that, they had quite poor FCs because the NC was a defensive coalition and prior to this had never been to war. All the good FCs had left because they prefer aggressive combat. And perhaps the Northern Coalition's biggest weakness was its strange policy of letting the coalition become filled with Care Bears. Basically, any full member of the coalition, alliance-wise, could invite another three alliances to join the coalition. Now, as you might expect, this would make the Northern Coalition become full of Care Bears quite quickly, because anyone could join if they were invited by a full member. So many of them were Care Bears that didn't really care about the Northern Coalition that much. There wasn't unity or anything like that. By May, they were at the door of Tribute, which was the homeland of the what was equivalent to Goonswarm Federation, the leaders of the coalition, which were Morsus Mihi. And by the end of June, Tribute, Vale, Teenal, Branch, all the regions to the east of the Declean had fallen. So Goonswarm at this time was no longer bordered by allies, it was now bordered by Russians, White Noise, Raiden, Northern Coalition took part of Vale, and various alliances took the rest. And so from the ashes of the NC there were some alliances left. Efcon, Space Monkeys Alliance, and Razor joined Goonswarm and TNT to form the CFC. So this was when the CFC was properly formed. Later in the year, something happened in Providence. Previously, prior to 2011, CVO lost control of Providence, so I think it was the first time in their history since 2004. That happened after Evoke, which was a German alliance, got evicted from Cloudring by the Declean Coalition in 2010. So CVO took that back. And Red Alliance, which were another Russian alliance who were in the DRF, took some space from against all authorities. They've been having a bit of a war and nothing really happened, so border moved a bit, but we'll get onto that later. So that brings us into 2012. Now, at the start of 2012, there were probably three major coalitions. You had the CFC in the north, Drone Russian Federation to the east still, and the Southern Coalition, which were, as you might expect, in the south. So I'll tell you about the Southern Coalition since they're new now. They were formed by Against All Authorities, and they were made up of alliances from the south. Notable names include Nulli Secunda. That's about it, really. So what happened in 2012? Well, the war began with a continuation of Red Alliance and Against All Authorities war, with Southern Coalition on their side, as I just said, at the end of 2011. So, with the help of the Southern Coalition, Against All Authorities began to push them back. They had better doctrines, more expensive doctrines, and they were more persistent as well. And then Solar turned on Legion of Death and Red Alliance, so that ended the DRF effectively. Prior to this, Legion of Death were helping Red Alliance, but Solar didn't help them at all. They just invaded them. So that caused the death of Red Alliance and Legion of Death, but it didn't fully cause the death of Legion of Death because they're still alive today. They're not as powerful as they once were. So that just left Solar and their associates, aka Pets, in the east. And then summer came along, when we had just the CFC in the north, random Russians to the east of the CFC, more Russians to the east of those Russians, and then the Southern Coalition in the south. So Delve, Aquarius and period bases were held by Southern Coalition alliances at this time. And everyone expected a massive war between the CFC and the Southern Coalition. It's sort of like what it is today in terms of power block. You have two massive coalitions with some bystanders, effectively. So everyone expected a massive war in the summer. However, it turned out to be a massive disappointment because when the CFC invaded, SoCo didn't really perform that well. Eventually, Against All Authorities gave the order to cede Delve after not that much fighting at all, which effectively shattered the Southern Coalition without that much fight, really. It's quite pathetic. So then, Tess took Kurt, Delve, Quirius, and Period Basis. But there's more to this story. Because if I asked you what the CFC's greatest defeat is, you'd probably be left wondering, well, they haven't suffered that many defeats, except for the Halloween War, you could say, but they didn't actually lose any space for that. Well, their greatest defeat actually came in the summer of 2012, when they apparently took four regions. This was some quite interesting diplomacy by Montolia. Basically, the agreement was that that Goonswarm Federation would get small pockets in each of the regions they took, of about five or six systems. So that's six systems in Delve, Quirius, and Period Basis, to build a jump bridge network and just to have space. But then, once all the systems were taken, Montolia went to Mitanni and he said, "We're going to keep all the systems." That's not the original plan. The original plan was that Goonswarm were going to have them. But Test, quite cleverly played this, because the CFC was faced with either two options: either they go back and grind all those systems again, that's three regions of grinding, or they just let Test have them. And frankly, the second option was much better for them, because otherwise they'd have problems with line member morale, because grinding three regions isn't fun. You've probably learned that with Catch, grinding regions isn't great. And yeah, so what they did was Goonswarm played it off using propaganda as a, well, that they said that they gave the system to Test because they love them and they love Redditors, but they didn't actually tell them what had happened. So, just like that, the CFC lost four regions of Sov and about 10,000 men. But you wouldn't have heard about that because of the way it's disguised in propaganda. So, the Southern Coalition began to crumble after that. Against All Authorities got eaten up by the Initiative. And the other Southern Coalition alliances, such as Red Alliance and Butchbird, now in the south, and Cascade Imminence and others, got attacked, and they were eventually replaced by the alliances that would go on to form the HBC, or the Honey Badger Coalition, which I'll get to later. Where are we? So,
you're good.
Later in the year, N3 was formed. They weren't actually that powerful at the time, but they slowly grew in power. They were sort of in the space between the Southern Coalition, where the Southern Coalition was, and the Solar Fleet in the east. So they slowly grew in power there. Not much else happened in that year. So let's move on to 2013. In the north, you still had the CFC, getting rich from technetium. Oh, wait, I missed something.
Yeah, I was going to say, what was more about the Honey Badger Coalition being formed? Because that was at the end of 2012, right?
It was actually. Yeah, I missed two things there. First thing was the technetium wars, which took place in Branch and Tinal. And that was aimed at regaining the space that the Northern Coalition had, and they were rich in technetium, which was at the time very expensive, before the first nerf, which was in September 2013. Each unit of technetium went for 200,000 ISK, and when you compare that to today's moon mineral prices, that's quite a lot. So the CFC took Branch and Tinal from White Noise. White Noise was a Russian alliance, but they suffered a setback after they invited English corporations into their alliance, which was bad because they didn't give the English corporations moons, so Russian corporations were favoured, which led to a rebellion, and the English-speaking corporations declared themselves that they were Black Noise, and they sort of rebelled until they were given moons, but. And then they tried to invade the CFC, but then the CFC just invaded them, and very quickly the war was over. Again, this is a war where the CFC didn't encounter much resistance. So, with Tinal and Branch reclaimed from the Russians, the tribute, which was held by Northern Coalition, was then next in the eyes of Mitanni. Again, they didn't start this war. This war started when Northern Coalition broke OTEC, which was a price-fixing corporation. Organization for controlling the price of technetium. And they attacked CFC towers. So the CFC rolled into tribute, and they did encounter quite a lot of resistance this time. They first dominated a U time zone, but then the Dot Bros pushed back in. I should say the Dot Bros were Northern Coalition, Black Legion, and a few others which were in the coalition in this war against the CFC. So those pushed back, first in the US time zone, but then the CFC retook control of the US time zone. And then they had a dominant Australian time zone. And in this time zone, the CFC kept feeding the Dot Bros kills. So this was solved by increasing the rate of siege in tribute and not giving them fights in the Australian time zone anymore. So the Australian Dot Bro pilots logged in and they were confronted with 15 or 20 repairing ops for the day, and they decided it wasn't worth it considering they wouldn't get any fights. So tribute fell quite quickly after that, followed by Veil of the Silent, and that was the end of the CFC's conquest in the north. And then, as Marconius said, the HBC was formed, I can't remember the exact date, it was sometime between summer and winter of 2012. And that's formed by the union of Test and Pandemic Legion. Now, this was the first time that Test and Pandemic Legion had this is the first time that Pandemic Legion had actually properly aligned themselves with an alliance. Prior to this, they were mercenaries, sort of like Black Legion, before they aligned themselves with Russians. So they basically fought on the side of whoever paid more. However, Test and Pandemic Legion grew quite close in the Summer War, where they helped Test take Delve, Quirius, and Period Basis. So they then formed the HBC, and many of the Southern Alliances, which had taken the old SoCo space, then joined them. So now we can move on to 2013. In the north, as I said, you still had the CFC, who were quite rich. Then you had the HBC in the south, which had replaced SoCo. And you had N3, fairly small, in the southeast. And finally, Solar Fleet and their pets in the east. So, about 5 days into the year, PL and N3 began to attack Solar. This was quite a long war because of the differences in time zone. With Sovereignty, as you know, it works on you have to win two or four defensive timers in your opponent's time zone because they can set the times the thing comes out. So that took a while because all these structures kept coming out in Russian Prime, which PL and N3 didn't have much of a presence in. And then something else that happened in January was the first schisms that appeared in the HBC. Montolio wanted to declare war on the CFC. I think this was because of fun's sake. He didn't really have a grudge against them or anything. But he wanted them to prove the HBC was good. So he went to Pandemic Legion, which was at the time owned, run by Shadu, who's an Alliance tournament commentator. And he said, I want to invade the CFC. However, Shadu said no because they were fairly evenly matched and they probably wouldn't quite win. So then Montolio decides to expose the PL's cowardice, I suppose, to the world. Now, PL didn't like this because they were seen as a fearless coalition alliance and they didn't want to be seen running away from a war like this. So this made PL look weak, and eventually they left the HBC and reset test because of this. And then the HBC and the CFC reset each other, so they formally severed from each other. And less than 5 or 4 days after that, the Battle of Osaki happened. Now, this wasn't actually significant in terms of a battle like BTAC-R5-RB. Only a handful of supercapitals were destroyed. I think more ISK was destroyed in the recent PL supercapital ambush against the CFC. But I don't know why it was so big in the media, but you're lucky it was, because it was because of that, partly, that you were so successful in your early months, BNI that is, and part of the reason why you got a community spotlight and then your growth snowballed from there. So that's Battle of Osaki helps a lot as far as that went, your founding. And then we moved to April, nothing happened in March, and Montolio, who was leader of TEST, resigned from TEST. So then the baton of the coalition leader of the HBC was passed on to Salt Dragon. While this was happening, Solar had pretty much lost all their space in the east. They moved all their stuff into one station. I think they were preparing to move it to Losec. And there were about 200 jump freighters and billions of ISK in line member assets in one station. So then PL and N3 jumped on it and hell camped it. Then they dead zoned it, as you saw the CFC do in, I can't remember what system it is, so Solar couldn't reclaim all their assets and they were stuck in there. And they remain stuck to this day. The station's still dead zoned and it's still got hundreds of jump freighters and trillions of ISK in it. And that's one of the reasons why Solar hates N3 and PL. So then something happened at FanFest. Salt Dragon.
Wait, can you go back? Sorry, what's the station that's dead zoned?
I can't remember. I can look it up if
No. I was just curious. I hadn't heard that before. So
if you search Dotland for dead zoned Life in Jail, I think that's the corporation that owns it. You can probably find it. So then, Salt Dragon, who was the newly elected leader of the, not elected, appointed leader of the HBC, went to FanFest, and ProGod Legend, who was one of the leaders of N3, insulted his girlfriend. Now, Salt Dragon took this insult levied at his girlfriend quite seriously, so he tried to take the HBC into a war with N3. However, Test, Raiden, and Tribal Man didn't really agree with this, understandably so. So, they declined the war, and they withdrew from the HBC. So without Test, Raiden, and Tribal Band, the HBC was effectively nothing. It didn't have any leadership, over half of its strength had gone, so they just sort of failed and died. They did try to form a coalition in the Dinner Squadron, but that was just absorbed by the Russians and N3. So Test were now all by themselves, as were Raiden and Tribal Band. And the CFC was watching this. The price of technetium had just been hit heavily by the changes that were brought in the summer expansion, which was Odyssey. It was no longer worth 200,000 ISK, it was now worth about 30,000 ISK. That's quite a big drop, as you can imagine. So they now had to turn their eyes somewhere else to fund their socialism. And there was now a very big alliance that was quite rich, and two other smaller alliances that were also quite rich. They were now completely politically isolated, and they didn't have a coalition. They would be quite vulnerable to attack, the CFC figured. So, the CFC then declared war on Test on the 6th of June. And they started in Fountain. Then, something that I didn't actually expect to happen happened, and N3 deployed to aid Test all the way from the east to the west. Now, N3 said they were formed to destroy the CFC, and that's probably not a good move, because then you've got propaganda issues there and stuff if you don't destroy them, and doesn't really make the other coalition like you if you say you want to destroy them. So they moved to Fountain and helped Test there. So it's now the CFC, Test, Raiden, Tribal Band, and N3 against the CFC. Raiden then disbanded, which wasn't very helpful to Test, and they gave Quirius to Northern Coalition. Tribal Band were reasonably helpful to Test. They didn't die quite yet. And eventually the war was mostly a stalemate until around July time. Now in July time, N3 were distracted by several goings on their home front. In the east, Solar had been chipping away at PL and N3 territory. They had been trying to reclaim their empire. They got about 60 systems, I think, before PL redeployed to the east. And N3's main Ranger alliance at the time, which was S2N Citizens, was disbanded by a Circle of Two spy. So they had to move their super capitals back for a bit. PL, I don't think, came back because they were practicing for the Alliance tournament, so they claim. And to be fair to Test, it's often said that the CFC did fight against the HBC and N3, they fought against Test and N3, but N3 weren't really that useful because they didn't really fully full-heartedly commit to the war. So eventually Test lost Fountain, culminating in the Battle of 6 VDT, which was another battle picked up by the media and reported about quite a lot. Over 4,000 players participated in that battle, and that sort of signalled the end of Test as we know it, or as we knew it at the time. So the CFC then ground out all of Fountain, and Test was left in Delve. It wasn't clear whether the CFC was going to go on to conquer Delve or not, and by extension, Quirius and period bases. In the end, they did decide to go for Delve. Test went back to Iridia, which was their staging system in the Fountain War. The CFC took Delve and period bases. And that was that for Test as a self-holding entity, until the other day when they did get some more self. So, what else happened in that year? Well, N3 had now taken all the solar fleets self. Let me get a sort of map up for this time so I can remember what I'm talking about.
Well, one of the things that I want to ask is how did PL get all the soft systems that they have? Because I think one of the things that a lot of people like to harp on is the narrative that PL puts out, that they're a mercenary group and they just take contracts and they have this great leadership system of meritocracy where everybody at FC will take a contract that they like and create a campaign around it and carry out the campaign and see the contract through, which is cool. But PL's got a massive infrastructure. Like, I mean, their infrastructure is scary huge, but it's very, very secretive. Do you have any comment as to how they changed from that small mercenary group to this large behemoth that has titans in every corner of the galaxy to drop at a moment's notice?
Well, their change started when they befriended Test, when they invaded Delve. So, as I said before that, they'd been around since 2008, just fighting on the side of the highest bidder. In one war, they could be allies with you, in the next, your enemy. But then, as I said, they allied with Test and the HBC. And one thing that's become apparent in recent years is that if you want to hold Sov, and you want to keep Sov, basically, you need to be in a coalition. Independent alliances and Eve don't work anymore. So they pretty much had to attach themselves to a coalition. Once they left the HBC, they went to N3, so they could keep their Sov, which they'd taken in the east from Solar Fleet. If they didn't join N3 with their Sov, then they probably would have had it conquered by now, because 2,500 members can't stop something like the CFC, for example. So then they're Renting Empire just expanded from there until it's got, I don't know how many hundreds of systems now, but yeah, it just kept on going from there.
But what keeps PL such a powerful force? I mean, it seems that nobody else has made an agreement like the Bort Lord agreements with the CFC following the Halloween War. So I'm kind of interested in just how that growth happened, because there's not really a lot of propaganda out there about it, or really any narrative about it. They're just kind of a secretive entity that has a lot of supers, and that's all people really say about them.
Well, a lot of their income comes from their renting systems. I mean, you can't have 300 odd renting systems without getting rich. And they can field huge numbers of supers. I can't remember how many of their pilots have supers, but it's quite a lot. So by alliance, they've probably got the most supers in the game, if you divide that by number of alliance members. So that they are the most powerful single alliance, except for maybe Goonswarm, but they've got four times as many members. So yeah, it's basically their rental empire. That's why they signed Bot Lords, because they're so dependent on the renters. If the CFC decided to attack their renters, as we did at the start of the Halloween War in November, then their income would be severely compromised, because they'd start losing renters who complained they got drops on constantly by when they were harassing, and yeah, they'd just lose all their money.
I gotcha. That's a little clearer.
So the next major thing that happens is the Halloween War, which you're currently finishing here in Catch. After the HBC dies, as I said, they formed the Dinner Squadron. That was mainly the elements of the game that were concentrated in the south and the southeast. However, they didn't last for long at all. Their sovereignty was then taken by Russian alliances such as Darkness of Despair, Darkness, and what were those ones? Against All Authorities. The Initiative Against All Authorities took back their space from the Initiative, for example. So the Russian Empire was slowly growing in the west of 2N3, and N3 didn't really like this. N3 had just absorbed some of the Dinner Squadron alliances themselves, so they were now bordering the Russians. The act that triggered the war came when Steinwagon allied with Solar Fleet and Against All Authorities, which basically united all the Russians into one alliance, like we saw in the Drone Russian Federation. So N3 then preemptively struck and tried to headshot the staging system of Against All Authorities. I think it was Against All Authorities, it might have been Solar Fleet. So they then started the Halloween War on Halloween. The CFC then deployed quite soon after that. They basically did what N3 did to test when it during the Fountain War. By acting as third parties, they had a honourable third parties gimmick going on for quite a while. But then they eventually formally blued the Russians. Prior to that, they just agreed to not shoot them during Stratops, and they fully deployed down to the south to help out the Russians. So until BTAC R5RB, this war was fairly boring. You had small gains on both sides. The systems shifted a lot. You had a lot of headshot attempts from N3. A headshot is where you try to attack the enemy's staging system. And if you win, you obviously win the station and they can't use it anymore for taking out ships, etc. But they all failed every single time. Against the Royal Authorities was quite awful during the war, but they kept on being reinvigorated by N3's failed attempts at headshotting their capital. The things you'll see in it, if there's a war between the CFC and N3 in the future, is that N3 will have difficulties and did have difficulties taking systems because you can just sino-jam them. Because N3 has such a heavy super-capital fleet, it relies on it, and it doesn't really have a sub-capital force compared to the CFC. That's mainly due to numbers, but CFC also has some quite skilled pilots by now. So if there's a sino-jammer up, you can't take the system, and you can't jump your capitals into the system, so N3 can't take the system, because if they do bring a sub-capital fleet, it will just get annihilated. So, as I said, the border shifted relatively little. They could use their super-capitals for defence, because you can't anchor sino-jammers in systems you don't control. That is until the Battle of BTAC R5RB came. So in this battle, as you're probably familiar with it, I dare say a few of you who are listening to this started playing EVE because you heard about the Battle of BTAC R5RB. It's quite hard to say, it's got quite an annoying name. So in this battle, as you're probably already aware, N3 lost 59 Titans and the CFC lost 16 Titans. Now this was far more Titans than had ever been lost in the history of EVE before. Prior to this, the biggest loss of Titans, I think it was 8 in a single battle. And that was combined on both sides. And so the Battle of BTAC R5RB was 9 times more deadly than that, dealing a total of 9 trillion ISK in damage to N3, which is probably a few months worth of rendering income. Well, it was at the time, they've got more renters now, but at the time, it's probably about 3-4 months of renter income. So that left N3 reeling. No one has ever suffered that much of a loss before. In the following months, in February and March, the Russians marched right up to the doorstep of the drone regions. The CFC held camps N3's staging system and trapped all their assets inside there, which was quite a lot. Not as much as the solar fleet dead zoning, but there was still quite a lot of assets trapped in there. And after the hell camping, the CFC decided to go home. That was the biggest mistake we've made in the last year, probably, because as you then know by the fact that the Russians are now dead, N3 eventually remobilized and took back their empire. That was because, first, well, it was triggered by a series of events. Let me just get my sub map up that's relevant to this again. So first, the disbanding of Darkness of Despair, which allows you to get your first 2 or 3 systems. So Darkness of Despair, which were one of the main Russian alliances, they were quite good, disbanded. This sort of shattered the Russians. Added to that, the Darkness alliance then switched sides to N3, so they lost another 2,000 members. So by this time, they were down 4,000 members. And I think they had 10,000 members at this point, and N3 had about 17,000-18,000. So, to be fair, against all authorities and Solar Fleet, couldn't really hold back N3 at this point, because they were just outnumbered. And N3 slowly swept through to the border of the CFC. I believe Coven tried to make a deal with N3 quite recently to keep their sovereignty, but they failed. And they got wiped out too. And then against all authorities, you're wiping out at the moment with the help of N3. And I think that brings us to the present day, where you've just done a strat op to kill I don't know how many more systems, but yeah. So that concludes the talk about.
That's pretty much where we are. I feel like I'm in the dark on a lot of it still. I think you were going really fast. It's kind of like, oh, and then these people were with those people, and these people are now with these people, and everybody's fighting the Russians, and then it's just... Like, I can't keep it all straight. And I mean, even though we're in this part of the space now, it just seems like it's so temporary, given the grand scheme of things. Not to, like, put a damper on stuff, Brave and Hero, but it does seem like a lot of these territorial things don't last for very long in this game.
No, they won't.
So, I have just some questions, and I'd just like to throw it out there. A lot of you have joined in as some of these strat ops have finalized. Thank you. We're just kind of getting back on track here. I just did kind of like a run through of what's happened since 2011. So, you know, we've talked about sort of, you know, the Declan Coalition and the old NC, the old Northern Coalition and the Southern Coalition and the formation of the Honey Badgers and the Test heyday. And I guess that was kind of like a non-violent revolution that Test did against the CFC.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you got to say, it's pretty clever considering that nothing like that had ever been accomplished in EVE before. Yeah, so, I mean, you take the tools of the sandbox and you got to use what you got.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess I have a question, and it seems like a lot of people fight Russians, and I do remember when we had the Mitanni on for our first Masterclass Monday, one of the things that he said that you never want to do is involve yourself with, like, an ethnic conflict, like, involving an ethnic group like Russians. But it seems that they've been sort of, like, the backbone and in a large part a party or an aggressor on just about every major conflict that's happened in NullSec since 2011. So I guess, and even with the CFC fighting the Russians like early in 2011, so what changed with CFC's policy towards the Russian alliances, or was it more like the Russian alliances kind of started coalescing more and working more as a cohesive unit?
Well, the CFC's policy to Russians, I don't think it really changed. It was just when they deployed in the Halloween War to help out the Russians, it wasn't so much that they wanted to help the Russians, because the CFC have had some bad blood with against all authorities in the Delft War, for example. And they haven't really seen eye to eye many of the Russian alliances. It was mainly to get back at N3. And the Russians do ally with themselves when there's an external threat worth uniting for. For example, when the DRF was formed, the Northern Coalition posed a threat necessary to make that a reality. And that happened again in the Halloween War, when they united to form a barrier against N3. Who would probably be able to wipe them out if they took on the Russian alliances individually.
But what is dead may never die.
But I think they might actually be dying now, because if you look at Solar Fleet, there's being a bit of so some of them have decided to form a new alliance called Dream Fleet with the ominous sticker DRF. So what is dead may actually die this time. Never know.
So what do you... We've talked about all this history, and we'll open up the fleet to questions here in a bit. But what do you see moving forward? I mean, one of the biggest things about history is, you know, sometimes people like to play the hindsight game and kind of use it to predict the future, and given the patterns that you've noticed, what do you see maybe past the next 30 days, but what do you see maybe in the next 6 months in NullSec?
Well, I'm fairly confident the CFC won't declare war on N3, because Mitanni doesn't want to for some reason. If I was in charge of the CFC, I would have, because The way I see it, I think N3 will increase. Well, basically, the CFC and N3 are in a cold war at the moment, as you may know. Each side is trying to build as many Titans and supercarriers as they possibly can before they go to war again. Now, given time, I think the N3 production of supers will exceed the CFC production, mainly because they've got a large amount of income. I think Northern Associates, which is the NC Dot Winter Alliance, has about 700 systems now. And if you rent out all of those systems for an average of about 4 billion an ISK, you can calculate that's quite a lot of monthly income, which is more than sufficient to pay for many Titans. The CFC's finances are more difficult to gauge, but I'd wager they're slightly below N3's. So over time, I imagine N3 will build supers quicker than them. But anyway, I digress, because that's not going to happen. CFC probably won't declare war on N3 before we reach autumn. What could happen is N3 decides to strike the CFC. That would happen in Quirius. What I think is more likely to happen is the CFC declaring war in autumn of this year. I'm not sure where they will attack from. Botlord seems particularly fragile after PL ganked the CFC super capital fleet in LoSec the other week. I think we lost quite a few supercarriers, 10 maybe. So
yeah, I think it was like about 10.
Yeah, we don't really particularly like them at the moment, but Botlord still stands for now. But by autumn, that might have changed. If Botlord is dead by then, I imagine we'll invade through the drone regions, so Calivela, Cobalt Edge, that area. But we've never had a war where there are literally two sides, well, two factions of the galaxy. We came close to it in Delvor, where there was the CFC and the Southern Coalition, but then you had Solar and the East occupying that. But the CFC and the N3 and N3 geographically border each other on both of their halves. So I imagine we'll see a two-front war to exploit that. We sort of saw that in the Halloween War in November, before Botlord was signed and before Pandemic Legion controlled the upper drone regions, the northern drone regions. But that didn't work. I was part of that, but it didn't work very well. But I think we will see multi-front warfare if that does happen, and it will happen eventually. Many were going on further than that. When the CFC pushed N3 back to the drone lands, you may remember everyone was shouting that the CFC was going to turn NullSec into a blue donut. We've seen that before in 2012. The reason why there will never be a blue donut, even if the CFC do win the war against N3, is because basically it won't work like that. Because if one coalition does conquer all of NullSec, they won't have any targets. So they'll then break down, descend into civil war. In the CFC's case, one side might ally with Goonswarm Federation and all the other alliances might go somewhere else and fight each other. And then you've got two sides of war again, and yeah, everyone will fight each other again, and there'll be no blue donut.
Sounds kind of like our goal. I think, like, one of the things that I wanted to ask you is kind of curious, and just I think that I'm finding now that we're out in our own space and our region of space, is like how important industry and just general income of your region is for an alliance to keep your line members on the front. And I think one of the things that no one talks about is sort of like the silent people in the background. I mean, a lot of times they're called Care Bears or renters or whatever, but it seems like they're incredibly integral to any block. And so I guess, like, how did it devolve to where renters were sort of like secondhand citizens, but yet they were still providing, you know, the most, like, basically all the income for these regions, while a group's main line members are off in another part of space fighting? So how does that, like, break down between, you know, Care Bears and renters? Why are they viewed, if they kind of have such an important role to all of it. You know, they're a huge asset, it seems, to all these groups. So,
well, renters aren't frowned upon as much as they previously were. If you were a Bob renter, they were the first to invent the concept of renters, I believe, in 2007 or 2006 or something. You would have been regarded as a second-class citizen and a pleb, etc. But then gradually, more and more coalitions adopted the model of the renter. Most of the hatred towards renters came from the CFC before they actually got their own renter alliance. So they, in particular, viewed renters as second class and alliances that used them as dirty. But that changed when they got the Greater Western Co-Prosperity Spear. And not all renters are, but the CFC relies primarily on Moons and Care Bears in their own coalition to sustain their reimbursement program. Pandemic Legion and Northern Associates, the CFC aren't that reliant on renters, they're more reliant on their Care Bears generating taxes and their Moons generating Moon materials. So, we've seen the treatment of the renter has evolved over time, because obviously if Northern Associates and PL treated their renters badly, they wouldn't have many renters, and that would be 90% of their income gone. And then there'd be it would be difficult to have a war without their renters.
I gotcha. So it's a big strategic asset to hit. If you hit somebody's renting space.
The problem is, because the PL and Northern Associates renting empire now stretches from literally the top of the map to the bottom of the map, attacking all of their renters is going to be quite a problem.
Yeah, well, it's I can't imagine what it would be like grinding that much soft. Having now almost reached the end of our own soft campaign. I think we're just looking forward to having a part of space where we can, you know, maybe spread out a little bit and do stuff and kind of develop our own. What are some, I guess, general patterns that you've noticed when people sort of start setting up roots that maybe we should be wary of? Speaking on history and always keeping in mind new things can happen, but what are some patterns that you've seen that people can stick clear of or try to emulate or be mindful of?
Well, there aren't that many patterns that have emerged. We haven't seen NullSec repeating itself. We've seen NullSec evolving. As I said at the start of my talk in 2011, there were four coalitions and many different alliances. Back then, you could have been an independent alliance. You didn't have to be in a coalition necessarily. But then, obviously, you did have to be in a coalition, as I explained, tests, because otherwise you'd die. So I haven't really seen any patterns repeat themselves, because it's just evolving all the time.
Cool. All right, guys. I'm going to open up questions to the Q&A fleet. If anybody has questions, you can always reach us at Porkbutt on Twitter or at TubRug1. Tweet your questions, we'll respond. I'm going to draw a line in the fleet. Hold on. That's an interesting question from Spore. Emilana, can you explain why several NullSec groups have begun taking interest in Providence?
Well, like I said earlier, CVA have held Providence since 2004, I think. I'll go to the reasons why no one wants Providence first. Basically, it's quite a poor region. It's got poor TrueSec. It hasn't got great moons. It's got some moons, but not many. And so CVA have basically built defensive fortifications, or as close as you can get to them in EVE, by building as many stations as they can, which would essentially make grinding out the region very boring and painful and tedious. However, we've seen Pandemic Legion, Waffles, N3U start taking an interest in Providence, basically because it's one of the last free states, if you will, in EVE. It's a large coalition of about 10,000 members, I think. That's confined to just one region, which is quite unusual. So the Not Red, Don't Shoot coalition, as we call them, is quite unique in that respect. And because they're the only non-aligned coalition, we've started seeing people deploy there to get fights. That's mainly why it is. It's just to get fights, because everyone's tired after having a very long war with each other. So I just want to have some fights.
Those are some good questions. So there's another one, and that is, do you think catch is an attractive system for renters? Can Brave, with its priority on content and good fight, be an attractive home for renters? And I know I have a position and leadership has a position on this. Any advice on that? Is this something that's worth getting into, or should we try to stay away from it and do our own thing?
Well, catch hasn't been rented out very often in EVE's history. I don't think it's actually been rented out at all before. So you'd be the first guys to do it, so you can't go on any past record here. But it's a reasonably valuable region. And do you mean fighting the renters by saying with its priority on content and good fights? Because the renters don't really want to fight that much. They're
more interested in care problem about. Is just that everybody and their mom has a jump bridge set up and waiting to bridge fleets into catch from all directions. So I think one of the main problems is it's like, just from, I'm speaking now from my own experience looking at the map and everything, it just seems like, again, everybody can get to catch. It's sort of like one of those highway intersections where thousands and thousands of cars go through every day.
Yeah.
And you don't really want to put essentially what are your agricultural farmers in the middle of, you know, a freaking freeway.
Be so, interesting to watch them.
Yeah, it would be an interesting experiment. That's for sure. All right. But yeah, some people pointed out like A had renters and other things. So.
Yeah, well, I don't think they were in catch. They were in the east, I think. I don't know why, but they just were looking at this off map.
I think people always kind of want sort of like the hero perspective and, you know, what's Brave position in all this. And I guess you kind of had spoken to some of that, but you know, being that there is a potential eruption between the superpowers maybe in the next year, what kind of position do you see Brave or hero coalition being forced into if something like that were to happen?
Well, you've either got two options, well, three options. You can either join the CFC, which I highly recommend, or you join N3, or you stay out of it. I don't think the third option is going to be possible, because you're right on the doorstep, or you're going to be right on the doorstep of one of the regions where we clash if there is a war. But if you do join the CFC, you can complement our already large sub-capital fleet. If you join N3, you can boost their sub-capital fleet up to the point where it might be able to contest the CFCs, because I worked it out through the coalition chart. If you join N3, these sides are roughly equal. If you don't and join the CFC, the sides are a lot more favoured in the CFC, at about the numbers we saw in the Halloween War. So yeah, your future will decide on whether you choose the CFC or the N3.
So you see a major strategic decision maybe having to be made in the future?
Yeah.
Oh no! Alright, I'm going to put another line in the sand. We'll contemplate our demise later. You folks are asking really good questions. I can't believe it's all silent now. Remember, you can also ask us on Twitter.
You can follow me too if you want.
Charles Wulong wants you to update the EVE Onion more often.
I have got a few articles lined up lately. Actually, I should have an article coming out tomorrow, depending on whether I can be bothered to finish it out. And maybe we'll see another two this week, potentially.
Sweet. What made you want to start the Eve Onion, anyways? I mean, I think it's one of the interesting things about Eve is sort of like this player-generated media zone that is all player content. So, what kind of attracted you to that, and how did you go from there?
Well, one day I was browsing The Onion, which, as you know, is the satirical website The Onion is based on. The Eve Onion, sorry, is based on, hence its name. And I was also browsing themetani.com in another browser. And then I thought, wait, I could combine these two. And so I did. And that's how we got the Eve Onion.
Well, I do appreciate reading it, even though sometimes it is very close to the truth. Very biting. There's a question from Bab1811. When Bob disbanded and reformed as Kenzoku, how badly did losing Sov 5 hurt defending Delve? I have no idea what this means, so I guess you're going to have to kind of explain that.
Well, when you take a system, it starts gaining a strategic sovereignty level. That starts at level 0, and after a week or 5 days, I can't remember, it goes up to Sov level 1, and then after, say, 20 days, it goes up to Sov level 2, and then 35 days, Sov level 3, up to 105 days, I think, which is Sov 5. Now, you need this Sov level to anchor structures at your star bases. I think you need one for building super capitals, so you need one to anchor a capital ship assembly array. You need two to anchor a, ooh, don't know, but you then need Sov 3 to anchor cyanosuppressors, which, as I said, stop your opponent from activating cyanos or you from activating cyanos as well, so you can't bring capitals into the system. And it also allows you to anchor jump bridges. Now, recently, my alliance has collapsed, and we reformed as a new alliance. In my region, we now have no jump bridges, and that's extremely painful. And I've already lost a couple of ships because of that. But it would have been even worse for Bob because they were in an active war at the time, and they would have needed the Sino jammers, possibly the anti-Sino jammers that have a, what are they called? Sino beacons, maybe, that allow capitals to jump to them. So without Sov 3, when they were disbanded, they couldn't do that. And if I'm not mistaken, they actually lost all their Sov anyway. So regardless of the Sov level, it was all taken by Goonswarm and Delve. They abandoned all their eastern holdings in 2009 when it happened and just rushed into Delve to take it so they couldn't gain any Sov anyway. IT eventually got their Sov back when Goonswarm got disbanded by their CEO a couple of, I think it was exactly a year afterwards. So that's how IT got Delve back.
Sweet. Yeah, it kind of sucks to have Sov down again. All right. So, what, I guess, attracts you to Eve, and what keeps you logging in to Brug1?
Well, I don't actually log in that much anymore, to be honest. I just write the Eve Onion, write for themetani.com every often. I've reached the bit of that stage where I don't actually log in that much. I just like play the meta game. But the reason why I don't like cancel my subscription is because I love Eve. Mainly because I love the events that take place outside the game. A lot of events take place outside the game. And because I like the politics, this is why I've done the talk, because I do like the history of Eve. I find it more exciting than real life history for some reason. So yeah, it's just the it's like Eve is unique. You don't have any other game like this where you have 11 years of history to go back and reflect on, which was all generated by players, not a single part from CCP. So
Oh, that was an interesting question from Raythrius. Wants to know, he says, people always say that Bob was a bad alliance and had to be destroyed. Why?
Well, Bob were quite an old alliance. They started in 2004. Now, at this time, I think the rebalancing was fairly awful. And basically, if you had a T2 ship, it would be a lot better than a T1 ship. So, by 2005, Banner Brothers had a lot of high skill point players who could fly T2 ships, T2 modules, which were quite vastly better than T1 ships. So, Goonswarm joined the game in 2005 from Something Awful forums, and in the following year they were hellcamped by Bob in their station. I think it was NPC Syndicate, not Nullsec at that time. They were hellcamped, and that gave Goonswarm their hatred towards Bob. They also hated them, as well as for having more SP. They began to abuse Titans when they came out in 2006. At that time, you could fire a Doomsday through a Sino, so you didn't even have to be on the same grid as the fleet you're about to annihilate. And the Doomsdays had area of effect, where they didn't do 2 3 million damage to a single target. They spread, I think it was 50, around an area like a giant smart bomb, focusing on the target. So they abused that, and that annoyed the goons and most other people who didn't have access to Titans. In addition to that, their attitude was a bit toxic, shall we say. But their leader in particular wasn't really liked. So Mole, he is viewed as arrogant and other things. So it was mainly, well, most people in Leave didn't like them really. So yeah.
So they just had the most space, got the most money, and built the biggest ships, and then abused all the power that they had.
Yeah. Well, and it was their attitude, so.
Gotcha. Well, is there anything else you guys would like to add? Ask? I will ask, while I have this little stump, if anybody has the ability to donate a T1 frigate to the Brave Dojo and can make a contract from the VTAC 3 station, your donation will be taken with much joy and kindness and gratitude. You can do this at any time. Brave Dojo is here to support the newbies of the Brave Collective. We're working on supporting the larger Hero Coalition, but for now, if you can donate to help our newbies out, explode things, and get better at the game, we will be much, much, much happy. I have a question for you, Tubrug. What are you training right now if you're still logging in and updating your skill queue? Is there a particular skill you're working on at the moment?
I am training Drone Interfacing 5 to get a carrier, and I've got 1 day and 17 hours left on that.
Oh,
So I
nice.
need a Archon to complement my Naglfar.
Oh yeah, Rythrius, he does have an alt in BNI actually.
Yeah, I
People
do,
want
but
to
it's
know what your alt is.
I'll link him in Fleet Chat. He's called Tabrik One. He's quite a subtle alt. You might not know he's me by looking at him. And I did FC with him for a bit, but then he's expired at the moment. I'll try to reactivate him soon. But yeah, I'll try to reactivate him.
Well, it's always fun having you around. I remember you came along with us on the big Battle of the Blobs thing that we did back in I
Yeah.
think the end of the summer, where we like had a 500-person pocket rocket fleet and we fought like RVB ganked, and we were supposed to fight I think some other people, and it just ended up being this massive blob of BNI and Brave
Yeah.
people running into things.
It's quite fun.
Well, cool, man. Is there anything you would like to add in closing?
I don't think so, no.
Cool. Well, Tubber One, thank you very much for coming to
Thanks for having
Masterclass
me.
Monday.
Thanks.
You're always welcome back and talk about history and shoot the breeze. Please don't invade our space first in the autumn, but you know.